the Euro Exposition from local TV.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Euro Exposition podcast. England are in the final of the Euros. I don't know how we've done it, but we've made our first final since 1966, and we've reached the final of the Euros for the first time in our history. Get those comments coming in like Liam is now. It's coming home. He's just got onto the live stream. Spam the caps lock button on his phone and just jam that in. We love it. We are joined by three fantastic guests on this morning's episode. We've got Joe. How are you feeling, mate?
I'm all right, mate. Buzzing, but a bit tired. But that's what it's all about in these tournaments, isn't it? Get to bed late, up early in the morning, because it's England and that's what we do. Come on.
Exactly. We're one step away. We've got Billy. How are you doing, mate?
Very good, thank you. Bit of a rush this morning after getting in last night, but it was all worth it.
I was going to say, we're totally worth it. And we've got we've got Nathan. How are you doing, mate?
Oh, I'm doing well, mate. Head's banging, but it's what you do, and it's football.
Exactly. It's what we do it for. Make sure to keep the comments coming in like Liam was as well. We are live on all the local TV Facebook pages. And if you do miss the live stream, you can catch the podcast on all good podcast providers. Spotify, Deezer, Amazon Music. You can even ask your Amazon device to play the Euro Exposition podcast. Lads, I don't really know where to start with this one because it was such a crazy, crazy night of football. But Joe, we'll come to you first. Just talk us through your emotions, the rollercoaster of emotions that you had last night watching that game, because it was some game, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, initially we all thought, you know, when Damsgaard scored, same old England. But I saw a tweet from Spencer FC, the YouTuber, saying this team is built different, and I tend to agree. These lads are built on togetherness, passion and desire. They've learnt from the 2018 World Cup exit, and they weren't going to be denied last night. There was something in the air, and you always felt that we could win. We didn't necessarily play our best, but that's what good teams do. They win ugly, they do the right things at the right times, as John Barnes says. And yeah, buzzing, absolutely buzzing. Bring on Sunday.
Nathan, how was your heart rate last night? Because it was, like I said there, a rollercoaster of emotions, of course. Conceding first, taking it to extra time. I mean, the thought of penalties was, the thought of seeing Calvin Phillips potentially miss a penalty was going through my head more than actually going out of the tournament. But how were you feeling during that game last night?
I mean, my heart rate was going through the roof when Kane had his penalty save, but that was such a typical semi-final. Like, I think a lot of people would have been much happier if England sort of dealt with Denmark more efficiently than they did. And credit to Denmark, they give England a really tough game. But it's the joys of football, man. You literally go from, with a Damsgaard free kick, wonderful free kick. And like Joe said, we showed great character to come back from that, because in 2018, when we actually went ahead through Trippier's free kick, we didn't know how to handle it. This time around, we go behind, and like I said, this team's built different. It's just, it's just still sinking in. You know, come Sunday, it probably still wouldn't have sinked in. After Sunday, it probably still hadn't sinked in, but bring it on. Bring it on.
The thought it's only like a couple of days away as well is scary. Like, we're literally talking like 3-odd days until we are in the, like, we're actually playing in the final. Like you say, it still hasn't sunk in that we're actually, like, we've made it. It does seem like a dream massively. Billy, Nathan mentioned there about the team spirit and going behind. Obviously, like, we went ahead in the semi-final against Croatia in 2018. The team spirit, it does seem like we are built different, like Nathan said. This team does seem to have something different about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's clear to see from the outside that it's a team full of best friends. You've got the connection between Cody and Mings on the sideline. You've got Royce and Mount, who it's well known that they're best mates. And I think that runs throughout the team. Obviously, when Thomas Muller missed that chance in the Germany game, we all see the footage of Sterling dropping to the floor with Kieran Trippier picking him straight up, telling him to keep his focus. And that same mentality would have been running through the squad last night. Obviously, Denmark took the lead, but we still had an hour of the game left. And I think the experienced pros in the 11, like Maguire, Kane, Sterling, they'll be aware that they can keep calm. They've still got time to get back in the game. And it proved that way in the end. And it ended up getting us into the final.
I like the way you mentioned Connor Cody there first out of that list, just to get the Wolves players in there. No, I know exactly. I know exactly what you mean. Like this squad is so together, yeah, more than we've seen on any squad, and we've said it on previous podcasts. In 2010, when you've got the players from your big clubs like Chelsea, Man United, Liverpool, they don't want the rivalries to really, like, they're still focused on those club rivalries a bit. But this squad is so together, like you say, with those partnerships. Exactly. It's like Rice and Mount are so close. And you see, well, I'll put my bias out there, Calvin Phillips and Ben White celebrating on the touchline as well. It's just so, so nice to see. Joe, obviously, I don't want to touch on the negative. Like, we went behind, okay, and we were speaking off air. If Jordan Pickford was just slightly taller, he probably saves that. Should he have done better with that for you? I mean, we don't really want to touch on the negatives too much. Like, we're in the final, come on. But it wasn't even a foul, really, was it, for the free kick?
Yeah, I'm putting it on record. Here's my Burnley bias, but Nick Pope would have saved that if he wasn't injured. You know, his long arms, we were discussing off air, that might be a hindrance sometimes to Jordan Pickford. But, you know, these goalkeepers pick themselves up when they have mistakes like that, and it's important to remain calm. And like the lad said, there was 60-odd minutes left of the game, so there was plenty of time to get goals, and that's what we did. You know, Kasper Schmeichel, on the subject of goalkeepers, I thought he had a good game. So, should have saved it, but at least we won.
Well, Liam has come in with another comment here. He said he's done the calculations, obviously. It's another part of this podcast is his dog's predictions. And he says he's got 37 out of 50 correct at this moment in time. He's just hoping that he says it's coming home. Otherwise, well, I mean, don't kick him out of the house. I mean, you know, if he doesn't predict it, I wouldn't send your dog out of the house, Liam. But, you know, hopefully he does predict that England do win the final against Italy. Nathan, We did batter Denmark for periods of that game. Like Joe said, Kasper Schmeichel was on good form in the game. He obviously kept out Sterling in the first half, Harry Maguire in the second half a couple of times. We were deserved winners in this one, weren't we?
Yeah, obviously, the way England did get the penalty and things like that, there's obviously a lot of debate whether obviously Sterling was fouled or not. And obviously, with an incident like that, obviously, a lot of people were trying to take the shine off the result. And to be honest, for me personally, I don't care as long as we're in the final. We're in the final. But Denmark, to be fair to them, they've been a credit to this tournament. You know, after what happened in the first game with Christian Eriksen, and obviously they had to play on after that against Finland. It was, you know, for me personally, I wouldn't have, like, how could you, like, sort of play on from that? I think, though, throughout the game, there was sort of, even when Denmark went ahead, they only really had like a couple of half chances. I remember from like to Dolberg, I think Martin Braithwaite in extra time had a shot well saved by Pickford. And on the free kick, Matt, I just quickly pull up on that. Obviously, we were discussing off air whether, say, like to Pope would have saved that. I think if you watch the free kick back, Denmark sort of shifted the wall back into the English wall because it was kind of on its side. Then they quickly shifted, which might cause a bit of distraction for Pickford. That's the only sort of leeway I'll give to him on that front. But in terms of the way Denmark approached it, Denmark were fantastic. But I think England's experience here, just we said about the likes of Maguire, who I think Maguire's been fantastic this tournament since he's come back in. I think it was unfair on, say, the likes of Mings to drop out, but evidently Maguire is the better defender, so you have to have him in. But other than that, experience sort of got us over the line in the end, in my opinion.
It did massively. And, you know, we've all had our chance to have our biases now. You know, Harry Maguire, with you being a Man United fan, Nathan, there we go. We can all put our biases in there now for this England game. Billy, How much would you have wanted to be at Wembley last night? Just looking back at the sort of scenes at the end where they're all singing Sweet Caroline in front of their family, in front of their friends, in front of all the England fans, the 67,500 fans that were there. You know, talk us through what you were, you know, what you were feeling watching those scenes come in.
It would have been unreal to be in the ground. I was watching it with a group of my mates out last night, and just the 10 of us being in a group, it was an amazing feeling. So, we, you know, having 2 years away from grounds and then being able to go back in and witness your country get to the Euros final for the first ever time, it would have been probably one of the best feelings that anyone could have had out of the people who were there. The atmosphere looked electric. Obviously, there was a good section of Danish fans behind the goal, good atmosphere to bounce off with a chanting. But it just looks like every time England play at Wembley, there are 60,000 people turning up in their England shirts, giving it full support with all the songs that they're singing. And, you know, it gives the team that extra 10%. If they've got no energy at the end of the game, the crowd can carry them home.
We obviously, like we said, like Joe, we mentioned before about the free kick. It may have not been a free kick as well. Nathan mentioned it earlier, the penalty that ultimately was the winning goal. It's probably not a penalty, but realistically, who cares at the end of the day? We're into the final. Obviously, if you're a Danish fan, you're probably fuming. And when VAR was brought up on the screen, I was thinking they could probably overturn this. Joe, do you feel like VAR actually, it may be a bit of a problem that they weren't going to overturn it, because whenever a penalty is actually given, they never seem to really overturn it. They only seem to really care about giving them when they're not given. And also, do you feel that England potentially should have had a penalty of our own in the second half, in 90 minutes when Kane was bundled over?
No, to be fair, I think Kane sort of ran into him from what I can remember. It was like a bit of a body check. I could have got that wrong, but for me, that wasn't really a penalty. And you know, sometimes with the Sterling penalty in regards to that, this is football. VAR works one way for you one week and one way for you another. So I know the Danish fans and the Danish staff have been complaining about that, but it could have just have easily happened to us and we would have been doing the same. So that's football for you, really. And other than that incident last night, I think the standard of VAR and the efficiency of it and the referees, I'm sure, have been very good. So fair play to the guy in charge last night for giving us a helping hand.
We don't do things easily, do we, as England, as England fans? So going through in this way, you just see the way it rolls off the tongue, England going out, just so used to saying it. But going through in that way with the penalty, it was just so England, and like Harry Kane did his best to miss it, but you know, did well to follow it in. I think he actually like did almost like a no-look shot as well when he followed it in, just for an extra bit of sauce on the Denmark players. We mentioned obviously Schmeichel was fantastic, Nathan. You know, he did his best to keep him in it. Could he have done better with the penalty? You know, could he have held on to it, tipped it around the post?
I think if you watch the penalty back, I think it bounces just before it reaches Michael's hand. So I don't think you can fault Kasper Schmeichel last night. I think the Sterling effort was obviously, it was point blank at him, but he still had, like you taught as a goalkeeper, basically just put your body in front of it, and he did. He had the Maguire header, which was pulled off a wonderful save with that. I don't think he could do any better with a penalty. I think it was just one of those things where, you know, despite his best efforts, he was just going to fall back to Harry Kane anyway. And like I said, I think England did deserve the win. But credit to Kasper Schmeichel, not only for that game, but throughout this tournament, because he's shown once again how much of a reliable keeper he is. He's been consistent for Leicester. He's consistent for his national team. And he's honestly, I think a lot of people sort of, when they talk about sort of best keepers in the Prem, maybe sort of looked down upon, maybe because he doesn't play for, say, the likes of Liverpool, Man United, Man City. It's all that big club mentality that he's not like in the conversation, but for me he definitely is.
He's been fantastic for Leicester all season, like you say. And apologies if you hear my dog barking, I don't know if you can hear him in the background. There's some guys come to fix like our house alarm at the wrong timing. You pull up on the drive at 11 a.m. I was thinking, if this goes wrong, then obviously it's going to happen during the podcast. But like you say, Schmeichel's been fantastic all season. He was fantastic in the game, fantastic in the tournament, obviously, with everything that happened with Christian Eriksen. Obviously, commiserations to Denmark for bowing out of the tournament. They've been fantastic all tournament. Billy, I want to talk to you about Gareth Southgate. Like, the chant is, you know, Southgate, you're the one. We know exactly how good he is now. I think a lot of people had concerns about him going into the tournament, and actually a lot further on. There's the alarm if you can't hear it. Billy, Southgate, his changes yesterday bought off Grealish. It was brave of him, but at the end of the day, it paid off.
Yeah, I was one of those people before the tournament who had a bit of nerves about Southgate's management, thinking he was maybe a bit too pragmatic for the talented pool of attackers that we've got. But I think he's starting to win me over. Well, he has won me over. And, you know, that first game against Croatia, I saw the lineup and we had two holding midfielders, and I was a bit wary of it. But as the tournament's gone on, you know, five clean sheets in our first five games. I don't think there's anyone who can argue with what Southgate's done in this tournament. He's set up the team perfectly. We look comfortable when we've got the ball. We look compact when we're at the back, and we look fluid when we're going forward. And I think he's got the whole system and the whole setup of the team spot on.
Like you say, five out of five clean sheets in the Euros. It felt weird conceding a goal. I didn't really know how to react, to be honest, because when that went in, I was thinking, this hasn't happened for so long. I don't really know what to do. Joe, we know you're a massive, massive England fan, and I know you're a massive supporter of Gareth Southgate as well. How impressed have you been with him and his changes, his tactical nous in this tournament so far, and he's taken us to the final, of course. How impressed have you been with him?
Yeah, I think a lot of people in this country owe my guy for an apology, to be honest with you. He's galvanised the country, the players. You know, we talked about previously the golden generation and teams like that having little cliques. There's none of that in this England dressing room, and that's what it's all about for me as a supporter, taking the tactics away from it and things like that. But in regards to the style of play and the reason why we have two defensive midfielders is I believe we don't actually have somebody who can play forwards in that area, and that's the reason why we do it. We have ball carriers like Mason Mount and Jack Grealish, but for me, there's a difference. And obviously, sometimes in the modern game, when defenders mess about with the ball at the back and, you know, make silly mistakes at times, those two defensive midfielders give us that security to, you know, help out and fill in if Maguire did want to progress forward and carry the ball out, for example. So, yeah, I think people also need to give him credit for his tactical nous as well. That was a big call, taking Jack Grealish off, and Gary Neville said he probably would have been embarrassed, but fair play to him. He came out after the match and his teammate said he wasn't bothered. It'll be hurting inside, but he'll be thankful of the victory and hoping he can come on and make an impact in the final.
Well, like Joe said there, Nathan, Gareth Southgate, Jack Grealish obviously taken off during extra time. That is an alarm, if you can hear that. Yeah, that's going off in the background. Jack Grealish obviously taken off during extra time. How would you be feeling if you're him, Nathan? Are you thinking, look, I've taken us to a final, I've come on against Germany, shown my class against Czech Republic, obviously done well to, you know, assist the goal as well. Are you thinking, I haven't done enough in this tournament, I want to do more, or are you just happy that you've got to the final?
I don't know, because a lot was sort of made of what has actually happened with Jack Grealish, why he was taken off. Obviously, we had Sterling, who had played throughout the 90, and through extra time, he wasn't sacrificed, because I think he was used as a pace outlet for the counter-attack, hence why we brought the likes of Trippier on for Grealish. But I think in Grealish's case, am I right in believing he came into the tournament with a slight injury, but he was coming back from injury?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah, so that might have been a precaution case. And obviously, in extra time, I think Southgate sort of knew that Denmark's legs, I think, to be honest, were going in the second half of normal time rather than actual extra time. And so I think Southgate has shown there that he's sort of got the mineral, so to speak, to sort of make those big decisions at the right times. You shut out the game and then you sort of try and counter-attack from there. But I think if I'm Grealish, I think you're initially disappointed, because obviously you feel as though, you know, you could have made an impact in the game, you know, could have possibly helped England get a third goal. Also, I think you see there was a bit of disappointment on his face, but I think Gareth is the sort of manager where I find with Southgate, and I'm in the same boat as the other two lads, that I've been convinced, I'm now convinced by him. Than I was before the tournament had started, because even before the World Cup in 2018, we had the results against France where we lost the game and they had 10 men. You know, it's that sort of questionable decision from him. But now, if I'm Grealish, I'll be disappointed. But I think Southgate is the type of manager that he'd reassure him that, look, you've got a big role to play in the final, and I expect that to happen.
Well, it's like you say, going into the World Cup in 2018, it wasn't exactly convincing. Going into this one, I still wasn't really convinced by Southgate or England at all. And Billy, the friendlies we had before the game, was it Romania and Austria we played at at the Riverside in Middlesbrough, I think it was.
Yeah.
They weren't exactly the most convincing of performances. I think a lot of people were worried about them. And even going into the actual group stages as well, I remember that Scotland game coming out of the pub and everyone just absolutely fuming and saying they want Southgate out. I don't think I was one of them, but I wasn't exactly too happy with Gareth Southgate, but I'm happy to eat my words. Like, he's proven everybody wrong. Billy, for you, what's changed since those games against Austria and Romania? And also, like, the early games of the group stages against Scotland where we weren't performing at our best. What do you think has been the key change to take us to this final?
I think those, especially in those pre-tournament friendlies, they just felt a bit passive, like we were trying to get through them without getting any major injuries. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case, as we saw with Trent Alexander-Arnold. But they just felt a bit, you know, get through this and then we'll have a little rest and get into the tournament proper. And then, obviously, as the group stage went on, we scored two goals, didn't concede. It wasn't thrilling, but I think it was more of a case of doing what we needed to do to get through the group and just make sure that there wasn't any major surprise for us. But I think with the knockout rounds, obviously Germany at Wembley, and then getting to a quarterfinal and a semi-final after that, they're massive games. So I think it's easy for a player to get up for and be ready for that. And obviously the crowd pushing them over the line, I think, you know, the momentum would have been building slowly throughout the tournament, and it gives the players a bit more freedom to go and express themselves and do a little bit more with the ball than what we would have done maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, you mentioned there the Germany game, the Ukraine game, and some of the other games we played in the knockouts. Joe, how much have you enjoyed this tournament so far as an England fan, watching us conquer Germany at Wembley, batter Ukraine 4-0 away from home, and then coming back to Wembley last night and beating Denmark in front of a packed crowd? How special has this tournament been for you? How much have you enjoyed it? Because obviously playing the majority of the games at Wembley just gives it that extra special touch, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's got to be a big major advantage with the England fans by our side, you know, cheering the players on. There were 64,950 in the stadium last night. It felt like 1 million fans. And that just shows the impact fans can have on a fixture and just an occasion, really. You know, it's football paradise for fans when we have 4 weeks of a tournament like this, especially coming from the times that we've just been in, you know, with COVID. So, yeah, it's been a brilliant tournament and I'm looking forward to Qatar 2022 when we'll bring it home then as well, hopefully.
I was going to say, you got to think this might be the start of a run where we just go on and win tournament after tournament. And, you know, our kids, grandkids are going to be thinking, you know, England are so good, aren't they? And we're thinking, no, you know, we've had plenty of years of hurt, don't worry. Liam's come in with a fantastic stat here. He said England have 56 touches in the Denmark penalty area last night, which is a tournament record since the data became available. Sterling had 15, Kane had 9, Mount had 7, and Denmark only had 5 in England's penalty area all night. I think that just shows, first of all, actually, Nathan, I want to touch on the 5 that Denmark had in our penalty area. You're obviously, you know, Man United fan. Harry Maguire, you've mentioned him. He's been fantastic since he's come into the side. But defensively, last night and this whole tournament, we've been so, so good, haven't we?
Yeah, I think as well, I can't remember who made the comment earlier, might have been Billy, about how you have partnerships within the team. Because if you look at that England back four, you've got on the right side, you've got a City partnership with Stones and Walker. They play together for well over like 2 or 3 years now. So they've obviously got that they've got a club chemistry. They can literally transition it into the national team. And then on the left side of the defence, you've got Maguire and Shaw, who've been solid all season, times of watching United this season. And I think as well, it's more the cover and defence as well. Because if you think, right, back to the golden generation, whatnot, we've talked about like Fernand, Terry, we had such, like, compared to what we have now, we had elite defenders back then who couldn't actually, like, who at times, you know, didn't exactly put in the best performances. Whereas now we've got players who are not considered anywhere near the level of previous teams. However, they're working because of the chemistry they have at the clubs. Mm-hmm. I think going into the tournament, there was a lot of questions about the defence. Obviously, we don't know whether the likes of, say, Joe Gomez would have featured if he was available. Obviously, Trent had to pull out with injury. We don't know whether that would have been the partnerships on the right side of defence, where we've been Trent and Joe Gomez. But there's a lot of concern about the defence going into the tournament. But England's defence, for me, have been the best in the tournament. Yeah. It's been so solid at the back, and I think the it also helps with the two in midfield as well, because there's been Rice and especially Calvin Phillips. And I think we all know about the talent of Declan Rice, because obviously he's been he's earned great great performances at West Ham, and obviously he's been linked with moves to big clubs. But for me, Calvin Phillips has been the one to stand out in terms of like a surprise player this tournament, because I think he's he had the one good season in the Premier League at Leeds, and people were thinking, is he really ready for this level? And for me, he's gone beyond that. I think he's a really, really good asset to have in midfield. But defensively, like I said, I think it's just all about partnerships, because club level, just transition to national level, just been fantastic in my opinion.
Nathan, I'll happily let you wax lyrical over Calvin Phillips as a Leeds fan, all, you know, as much as you want on this podcast, honestly. You know, you mentioned him, you mentioned Rice, and the defence were fantastic. Billy, were there any standout nominations for a Man of the Match award in last night's game against Denmark for you?
I think that the main one for me would actually be Luke Shaw. I've not seen his name mentioned too much on social media, but it just felt that every time somebody was up against him, he dealt with it convincingly. And every time he got the ball, or whenever Raheem Sterling got the ball, you'd see Shaw bombing on down that wing. And he was constantly giving us an outlet and allowing Harry Kane to drop off into the penalty area. And as soon as that ball drops onto his left foot, you know that it's going to be a decent ball in, landing roughly about 10, 12 yards out from goal. And I just think he was outstanding. And he's, every game he's played in this tournament, I think he's been brilliant so far.
If we touch away from sort of the in-game analysis, and we don't want to look ahead to the final in terms of detail and previews, but we are in a final of a major tournament for the first time since 1966. Just, I know we said it hasn't sunk in, but try let it sink in for this moment. Joe, how excited are you for Sunday? How nervous are you for Sunday? And how much are you just going to sort of take in the whole day? Because, like, you know, we throw the phrase around, these days don't come around often, but it's been 1966 since this day came around. It does not come around often. How much are you looking forward to Sunday?
Yeah, extremely excited. The players have a chance to immortalise themselves. It's weird, really, as fans. We're nervous for a game that we can't have any impact on by being nervous. So we might as well just soak up the atmosphere, have a few drinks with our friends, really soak it up, because these days don't come around often, like you say, and it's the players' job to focus on not getting nervous and complacent, because that's what they're paid for. And I just feel like there's something in the air. I know Italy are a very good side, but I'm confident. I wasn't necessarily last night after seeing some bits of play, but now this morning, you know, I'm thinking that we can do it, hopefully.
Nathan, what have you made of, because I remember in the World Cup in 2018, it just unified the country, because it was like the first good run we've gone on in a while. Obviously, 3 years later now, we're going on the same run, but better. We're now in the final. What have you made of the tournament? You know, how much it's unified the nation? How much have you enjoyed it, and how much are you looking forward to Sunday?
Well, if you'd have asked me after the Scotland game, I would have gave a very, very negative answer. But I think compared to 2018, it was more unexpected run. I think this time around it is sort of unexpected that we're in the final, because I think if you ask a lot of people before the tournament started, when England gets to the final, I think the majority, you know, the fan base would have been very sort of pessimistic about those chances. However, I think it's because of what's happened over the past year with the country and what's happened in the global climate, and with everything seemingly slowly going back to normal. Like, I'm sat there thinking, do you know what? If we do end up winning it and we go into like another 4 week lockdown, I really, really, really wouldn't care. Yeah. Because that moment of say winning it will literally just breathe so much relief into the country. Like, considering what's gone on over the past year and the way things have been handled in this country, and now I'm looking forward to it. Well, I'm looking forward to it now. I won't be on Sunday. I will not get any sleep Sunday, like morning or Saturday night. I'll be wide awake for that. And See, now I'm talking about it, now I'm getting nervous. But nah, bring it on. Just it's one of those games where like you go to a final, you kind of you want it to be over and done with, but then you really want to be on the good, you know, the good side of it. So
yeah. Billy, like Nathan said there, it's been such a bad year and a bit really for everyone in the country, everyone across the world. We didn't expect us to get this far, did we, really, going into this tournament? But say if we, part of being an England fan, part of being a football fan is dreaming, is fantasising. Say we win it on Sunday, what sort of scenes are you expecting in this country? Like, are you expecting a potential bank holiday? You like, how crazy do you think this country will go if we lift the trophy on Sunday?
There'll be people everywhere until about Thursday night, I think. I think as soon as, if we can win it, everybody will leave the pubs and the streets will just be full. You won't be able to move. People will be dancing on roundabouts like we've seen, hanging off lampposts. You know, there'll be flags all over the streets. And it could be absolute mayhem for at least early hours into Monday morning. And I think everybody's all for that if it happens. Everybody just wants to get that excitement of actually watching football in England, trying to bring football home. You know, we just need to get all that excitement out and have one big celebration Sunday night.
Well, if we don't win Sunday, you can come back to that clip of Billy as a sort of, here's what you would have won if we hadn't done it. This is what you could have had, but unfortunately, we're all, you know, sad because Italy have beaten us. No, hopefully we can experience those sort of limbs and scenes across the country. Like you say, you can imagine everyone just pouring out of the pubs onto the streets, chanting until probably Qatar 2022. Some people might start walking. I don't know. It's just going to be crazy if we do.
I might do that as well.
Joe, obviously, it doesn't look like it's going to be full capacity. What is the actual capacity going to be for the final? It's not full at the moment, is it? It's 60, meant to be about 60K, I think.
Get more in.
Yeah. Do you think it should be a full capacity ground for the final?
Yeah, the stadium will be in raptures, you know. I do think we should also have a bank holiday Monday if we win, because there'll be a few sore heads, like Frank Gallagher says on Shameless. We know how to throw a party in this country, and I think there'll be a massive one if we win, and rightly so. Everybody deserves to let their hair down now. We've gone through a tough 18 months to 2 years, and this is what football can do to fans, you know. People who don't even like football come together in these occasions, and it's brilliant to see, but it can just as easily go the other way as well. So I hope we don't see any bad scenes should we lose, because it's about holding our heads up high and, you know, showing that we're fully behind the country and just showing that we're good people, really.
Nathan, for you, should there be full capacity at Wembley for the final?
Yep. There's no like discussion on this. I don't, like I said previous, I don't care whether there's a 4 week lockdown, 6 month lockdown after this. Get every single fan and make it hostile as you can possibly can. Obviously, we'll let some Italian fans in. We're not that like selfish. I know. you know, let some Italian fans and stuff like that. I think you've got to go full whack at this point, because obviously, come August time, there'll be full ground, there'll be full capacity in stadiums across the country from Premier League to League Two on down. So you may as well sort of kick off the first sort of initiation of that by having 90,000 people at Wembley. And I think if you do that as well, I mean, those tickets will sell out in like not even minutes, like literally about 30 seconds. You're probably counting it yourself to see how many seconds they actually sell out in. Yeah, get them all in, just because obviously most of the country by now will be vaccinated at this point anyway, or at least got their first dose. So yeah, bring it on.
I was going to say, the only reason why they obviously, you know, wouldn't want to, or they haven't at the moment, is because of the pandemic. But if you look at the scenes last night, what extra difference is an extra sort of 30,000 going to do? I don't really know what the impact of 30,000 people will do to the country. But like you say, a lockdown afterwards, or just, you know, a little stay inside on the bank holiday Monday or on Tuesday, we can take it, can't we? I'm sure it'll be all right. But like you say, after the year we've had, just get as many people in there as possible, sell it out, and watch it, bring it home. I don't want to sort of ask for score predictions, but I kind of am going to in a way. I'm just going to ask you all separately, starting with you, Billy. Is it coming home?
It is coming home. I think it will be same as last night, 2-1 after extra time.
Joe, is it coming home?
Well, I don't want to scare you. I said to my grandma this morning on text that it's going to penalties, so I think it will be. And Harry Kane will score the winning one. If they put him on that, they should do. I think it's going penalties. And just a quick one, if anyone wants to give me a ticket, hit me up, you know, because it is coming home and we're going to win this thing. Come on.
If it does go to penalties, they need to tell Harry Kane he can't score from a following on the penalty shootout. He needs to sort of score straight away, please. Nathan, is it going to be coming home Sunday?
Yeah, you mentioned about Harry Kane penalty. I just literally got flashbacks to last night. I can't be going through that again. It's coming home. He says optimistically. I'm going 1-0 England. I think defensively, I think... Because of how solid we've been, I think I can see, say, Sterling scoring a winner, say, in the second half. I think it'd be a very, very, very cagey first half.
Yeah.
Because it depends whether we let Italy sort of settle down, which we can't do at all. So, 1-0 England.
Well, for more, actually, no, I say it is coming home Sunday, but for more in-depth analysis on the final, make sure to check out the Euro Exposition podcast tomorrow at 11 a.m. on all Facebook, local TV Facebook pages for your in-depth preview on the big final on Sunday. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me as usual. Make sure to follow us all on Twitter on our handles on the screen. We'll see you Sunday on the reaction after Sunday. I don't know how it's going to go. Hopefully it's a win. Thank you very much for everybody who tuned in, and we'll see you tomorrow.